As the war continues in Sudan, many countries are mobilizing to evacuate their citizens. However, not every foreigner in Sudan may receive such help. As such, more will have to rely on international organizations that may decide to fill the gap. Now in the studio, joining me right about now is the acting humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, who will share with us the humanitarian response to people fleeing the war in Sudan. Peter Vander Aurat joins us right about now in the studio. Peter, good morning. Good to have you, as always, on the Miraya Breakfast Show.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Yes, and how are humanitarian partners planning to respond to the needs of people fleeing the conflict in Sudan? But before even that, what is your response to the situation in Sudan? Like, when you first heard and the news and all that, what was your first reaction?
Well, I think my first reaction was great sadness for the people of Sudan. I think that the people of Sudan have gone through a lot in the past years, in the past decade. And there was all of this hope after the revolution and after the demonstrations in Khartoum. And now people are plunged into a war situation that is terrible. My second thought was for the many South Sudanese that are living in Sudan. Mm. You know, we have about 800,000 South Sudanese refugees living in Sudan. Those people fled the conflict here in South Sudan, and now they find themselves in a conflict again in Sudan. In addition to that, there's about 300,000 registered and probably a similar amount of unregistered South Sudanese migrants living in Sudan. So South Sudanese people in Sudan were also directly affected. And I think that the third, you know, the third thought was, what is this going to mean for South Sudan? And particularly, of course, we talk a lot, and rightly so, about you know, South Sudanese returning from Sudan or fleeing to South Sudan, Sudanese refugees and people from other countries coming into South Sudan seeking refuge and safety. But there is also another element, which is the economic impact. When you look at states inside South Sudan bordering with Sudan, they depend for their economy a lot on Sudan. A lot of the basic items already, and I'm speaking to my colleagues in Unity State, speaking to my colleagues in Abyei, elsewhere, prices are doubling and tripling. In a context where you already have a lot of people in South Sudan that were struggling before these prices started to increase. So I'm also very concerned about what does it mean for South Sudan and for the people of South Sudan if this crisis is not contained. And so these were sort of my initial thoughts, I think. And then, of course, also the concern for the safety of the colleagues of IOM, of UNHCR, of WFP inside Sudan, the national colleagues as well as the international colleagues. So these are sort of my initial thoughts around the crisis in Sudan.
Yes, and how are humanitarian partners planning to respond to the needs of people fleeing conflict in Sudan?
Well, currently I have to start by saying that together with the government and specifically the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, the RRC, the international humanitarian community is already responding. We are, for example, most of the arrivals so far have come through RINC, and there we have UNHCR, we have IOM, we have the RRC helping or assisting the people that are arriving. So currently we are, the influx or the inflow has been relatively limited so far. We're looking at, from our perspective, somewhere around 6,000-7,000 people that have arrived into South Sudan. But what we have seen is a trend of an increased number of people arriving. For example, when you look at RINC, Saturday we had 500-600 people, but yesterday we had 1,700. So we are collectively preparing together with the government on a larger number of people arriving, focusing on the most vulnerable, providing assistance when people arrive, whether it is telecommunications so that people can call their families. Mm-hmm. Some people need to be transported from the border to RINC and supported to go to the areas of origin inside South Sudan where they want to go. Some people require immediate some food, some water. So we're trying to set up a system whereby we support people immediately when they arrive at the border, but also that we can support their rapid onward movement to the areas where they would like to go to. That's sort of the overall plan, if you like.
Yes. And how is this affecting the humanitarian response to already struggling people here in South Sudan?
Well, I think it's an important question. And at the moment, so we currently have about 9.4 million people out of 12 million people in South Sudan that are in need of humanitarian assistance. We have a humanitarian response plan that currently is funded for about 20-25%. Now, of course, when people start coming in large numbers into South Sudan, we will have a new group of people that will require our support. So there's sort of two scenarios going forward. Either the humanitarian community will receive additional funding to deal with this new quote-unquote crisis, if you like, or we will not. And then we will have to make very hard decisions in terms of who can we help and who can we not help, because then we will have to start using the pot of money that was intended for supporting people inside South Sudan to also cover people that are now coming into. I mean, I'm reasonably confident that we will be able to mobilize resources, and I hope that the international community will show solidarity with the people of Sudan and the neighboring countries, not just South Sudan, in the same way that the international community is showing solidarity with the crisis in Ukraine. I think that's, I hope, where we're going to, because it's not just South Sudan that is affected. It's also, of course, the people in Sudan first and utmost, but also people in other countries that are bordering Sudan.
Yes, and of course, with the donor fatigue and all that, you mentioned Ukraine situation and, you know, the international community putting hand in there. Now, is a position you don't definitely want to be in, but who will you help in case there's no more funding?
Well, I think that I definitely, it's a position that we don't want to be in, but what you do in situations like that is that you start to have stricter and stricter and stricter vulnerability criteria. And essentially, you're sort of only being able, if your money reduces, the number of people that you can help reduces, and you have to be more and more stringent on your vulnerability criteria, which means that you are going to leave out people that, for their survival, not just to feel better, but for their survival, would require humanitarian assistance, and some of those people will be left out. And this is going to be the reality. We're already faced with very difficult choices. You know, the World Food Program and others. We are faced with difficult choices in terms of saying, okay, we really can only help this group of people, and maybe the other group of people would also require assistance in an ideal situation, but we're far from an ideal situation. So that's what I'm a little bit that's I hope that we will not get into that scenario.
Let's all hope so, of course. Now, what are the immediate needs of these people when they arrive at the borders?
Well, I think it sort of depends, and maybe the starting point is that we talk about arrivals for a good reason, because we've sort of three groups, if you like. The vast majority of the people that so far have been entering from Sudan into South Sudan are South Sudanese nationals. Now, within the South Sudanese nationals, you have sort of people that can take care of themselves when they arrive. You know, they maybe need a little bit of food, some water, but they can move onwards to their families and in South Sudan without much support. Others are much more vulnerable and require transportation support from the border to Renk, maybe onwards. They require nutrition for their infants. They require some non-food items, these type of things. So it really depends on that. Mm-hmm. So then you have a second group, which is Sudanese refugees, very small. I mean, at the moment, I would say that more than 90% of the people that have arrived are South Sudanese nationals. And then you have some Sudanese refugees who will require support, of course, to get shelter inside South Sudan. And UNHCR is planning to the extent possible to put those people into the existing camps for Sudanese refugees inside South Sudan. And then you have the last category of people, which are what we call the third country nationals. These are students, for example, from Kenya, from Somalia. We have people from Eritrea arriving. We have people from Nigeria arriving. We have some people from India arriving. Mm-hmm. So these people, they need some particular support. They need support How to get back to their home country. And that is something, of course, where IOM is closely working with the embassies of those countries to see how these people can be supported. For example, there was a group of Kenyan students that arrived at the border. They needed support to be transported to the airport nearby, about 2 hour drive from Renk. And then the Kenyan government sent a plane to pick up the students and brought them back to Kenya. So it really depends on you know, the type of arrivals that we have. But overall, I think that what we are seeing as a trend, and that is somewhat concerning, is that the number of vulnerable people who do need assistance immediately upon arrival is increasing. Where the initial arrivals, people could mostly take care of themselves. They arrived and they could move on by themselves. Now we are seeing people that are psychologically and physically exhausted and require immediate assistance at the border. Mm-hmm. For our planning purposes, we are expecting the number of vulnerable people that are arriving to increase in the coming days and weeks, and that's what we're preparing for as humanitarians together with the government.
Yes, and as acting humanitarian coordinator here in South Sudan, what is your appeal really in this current situation?
What is my
appeal?
My appeal, I think, is and I think it's very positive to see the engagement of His Excellency the Presidency on trying to bring peace to Sudan and trying to bring a ceasefire. I mean, I think that has to be the first appeal. There is no solution to this situation other than peace negotiations and eventually peace in Sudan. And my second appeal would be to the international community and saying let us show the same type of solidarity that we're showing with the Ukraine crisis. Let us support the government and those people arriving to make sure that this does not become a humanitarian catastrophe or another humanitarian crisis inside South Sudan. And maybe my final appeal is let us not forget about the people in need in South Sudan. We have a new situation arriving, but there's still a lot of people in need, and that number or these people's needs are likely to increase with the upcoming rainy season, because let's not forget, at the same time, we're currently preparing for the upcoming rainy season, and I'm sitting at a wooden table, so as we say in Belgium, I'm sort of touching wood, that we're not going to have massive floods this year inside South Sudan, because otherwise we really are in for a challenging few weeks and months going forward.
Peter, thank you so much for coming to Miraya Breakfast Show, but just before you go, any other final remarks you'd like to add?
No, thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for having me. And maybe one final remark is that I would like to, and I'm not just doing this to be diplomatically nice, I would like to congratulate the South Sudanese government for allowing people to enter the country, also people from third countries, from other nationalities, Sudanese, but also others. And I think that shows a great understanding and sympathy with people fleeing conflict. It's not the same in all the neighboring countries, I can tell that. So in that sense, I think South Sudan really is becoming an example for the region, saying when a crisis in a neighboring country happens, let us help the people that are trying to flee. So I think that's something that that all Sudanese should be proud of.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming to Mirai Studios. We wish you all the best.
Thank you.